This week's parasha is Parashas Kairach. And at the Aliyah of Chamishi, we find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Moshe Rabbeinu after the terrible mutiny that Kairach v'Hadassai waged against Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem commands Moshe Rabbeinu to take from every one of the Shvatim, all the Nesiim, all the leaders of the tribes of Klal Yisrael should put their staff into a collective pool of staffs. The mata of Aaron, the staff of Aaron, should be in the middle of all of them. And then wait to see what will happen the next day. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that the mata that will blossom and will sprout forth vegetation or fruits, that will be the mata that I have chosen as a leadership, as the main leader of Klal Yisrael after Moshe Rabbeinu, of course. And the pasuk says that after that was done, v'hine parach mata Aaron lebeis Levi, the mata of Aaron was the one that sprouted, v'yotza parach v'yotza tzitz v'yigmal shkedim. And this mata of Aaron miraculously sprouted, it blossomed, and it bore almonds, which means that there was a process by which the almonds actually developed on the stick as if it was a tree, as if it was a normal tree. Of course, this was uprooted from the ground years ago. It was the stick of Aaron, but yet it showed how HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose Aaron over the other Shvatim to lead Klal Yisrael. The Brisker Rav asks, why does the Torah tell us the way that the fruit was actually developing? That it actually was producing flowers and blossoms and sproutings. And also it had shkedim. Like, what difference does it make? Just tell us the cut to the chase. Tell us the bottom line. The bottom line is that there was shkedim on the stick. That was the main thing. The main thing was that the fruit developed from nothing into fruit, into shkedim. Does it matter that there was also tzitzin and prachim that were in the process of the evolution of the shkedim? That seems to be irrelevant. So the Brisker Rav answers based on a Gemara in Yuma and Afnun Beis Amud Beis. And the Gemara there says, Mishen Nignaz Arin, from the time that the Arin was buried somewhere on the Harabayas, so Nignaza Imaitz in Senes Haman, other things were buried together with the Arin. What else was buried with the Arin? That's in Senes Haman, the jar of Man, that was supposed to be a memory for all time of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided us Man in the Midbar. There was a jar of Shemen HaMishcha. And finally, there was a Makala Shel Aaron. There was buried as well the stick of Aaron, the staff of Aaron, Ushkedeha, with its almonds on it, Upracheha. The Gemara adds the flowers, the buds, were still also on it. Which means that it wasn't just merely a process through which all of the shkedim became shkedim, but it actually was, you actually saw the evolution of the shkedim. The prachim remained prachim, and the tzitzin remained prachim, and then there were shkedim as well. But it wasn't just that everything became shkedim. Some of them did not become shkedim. Some of them remained in the perach state, in the tzitz state of development. And that's what we see from this Gemara. If you look in the Taisis Yishanim there, the Taisis Yishanim asks, why are the prachim there? L'chaira, there were shkedim. What does prachim have to do with it? What are these flowers, the bloomings that are the stage before the shkedim develop? And so he says that the nira ki miktas ha-prachim nisharu, some of the prachim remained. Shalai gamlu shkedim, that they did not develop into full-fledged shkedim, they remained prachim, nisharu prachim. So the Brisker Rav explains this Taisis Yishanim as follows. Why is it that this is necessary? Why is it that on the staff of Aaron there were prachim as well as the shkedim, even after the end. It wasn't just merely at an early stage of development that there were prachim, but even at the end, that next morning, when Moshe Rabbeinu came to the oil and found the prachim, found the shkedim, it was still prachim and shkedim, meaning there were shkedim, there were prachim. Some of the prachim, says Rabbeinu Hanan, the Taisa Yishanim, did not fully develop into almonds. They stayed prachim, they stayed flowers. Why did that happen? So the Brisker Rav wants to say that the sign that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave that he was going to choose Aaron was Va'isha Sher Evchar Boy Mateo Yifrach, that the man that I chose of all the Nesiim, his matter will be Yifrach. It doesn't say his matter is going to be Sheshanim. It says that it is going to be Shkedim, rather. It says that his matter will be Pireach. It will develop, it will blossom. Meaning that the sign that Aaron was the leader of Klal Yisrael amongst the Nesiim, he was the head of the tribe, and he was the main primary leader amongst all the leaders, was the fact that his matter was the one that was Pireach. It sprouted. So the Brisker Rav says that's why some of the prachim remain prachim, because it wasn't merely to get to the shkedim point, but you want to see the full evolution of the pricha, of the flourishing of the matah. So when Moshe Rabbeinu came the next morning to check out the matah, he saw that the matah of Aaron had shkedim, but they also had the prachim and the tzitz, meaning you were able to scientifically see the entire process by which the shkedim developed. And the Brisker Rav takes it back to the Pasuk, and that's why the Pasuk says that the matah of Aaron was Pireach, Vayotza Perach, Vayotza Tzitz, Vayigmal Shkedim, meaning it wasn't just telling us how it happened, it told us the way that the matah looked. When Moshe Rabbeinu came and found it with the Tzitz, and he found it with the Prachim, and with the Shkedim, but all the stages of the development were there for everyone to see how this happened. Now, after the Brisker Rav, I guess we have to ask a question, and that is, what's the underlying message for us to take from this? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu deem it necessary to show the pricha, the flourishing of the matah of Aaron? Not only to have it happen, but also to make sure that some of the prachim remain prachim and the tzitzin remain tzitzin, and that you saw the actual development the next morning of the Shkedim, and that for all time this was going to be buried together with the Aaron, and for all time we have in this world a proof to the selection of Aaron amongst all the others, and that his matah not only developed Shkedim miraculously, but we get to see the exact way that it developed Shkedim. What I wanted to suggest was, and I think it's emes, is that what exactly was Kairach V'Hadassah thinking? What were they thinking? How does this go through a person's mind? Imagine if all of a sudden one day a person has a mishagas in his head and he says, I want to be the God of Adar, and why does Reb Chaim Kanievsky get to be the God of Adar? I want to be the God of Adar. And as a result of that, he basically starts making a whole revolution again. Is he crazy? What's going through your mind starting off with Reb Chaim Kanievsky? Who do you think you are? Like, where did that come from? Where did that Ruach Shtus emanate from? You don't know who you're going up against? You don't know that he's the God Ladar? The only answer that a rational human being might feasibly come up with is that you think, well, listen, I'm a rabbi, I have smicha, I learn, I have leadership qualities, I have good yichus, I have a great personality. And Reb Chaim is also, he's a gadol, and he's a very big Talmud Chacham, he's a rabbi, he has a following, but we're basically, you know, we could basically go toe-to-toe, because we're both rabbis, I did Shas through Daf Yomi, he does Shas every day, you know, but we're sort of on the same page, and so I could theoretically rationalize maybe, you know, somehow in a crazy day that I could go toe-to-toe with Reb Chaim Kanievsky. What's the flaw in my logic, though? What's my flaw in my logic? The flaw in my logic is that you're seeing Reb Chaim Kanievsky today, and you see he's a big rabbi and whatever, but you don't understand that Reb Chaim Kanievsky did not develop overnight into Reb Chaim Kanievsky. You're seeing the end result, and you think, okay, wow, so he's a Stipler son, and he was born in the right place, the right time, or whatever, and so I could also do that. If I would learn 50 years in Mitzvah Hashem, I'll also become Reb Chaim Kanievsky. But you don't understand what Reb Chaim Kanievsky is. Reb Chaim Kanievsky is not Reb Chaim Kanievsky because today, you know, he's in his 90s and he's the Gadol HaDor and people come to him for brachas. Every single day of his life, he was growing. He was prospering. He was flourishing. He was chazering. He had a Melus Batayra. He had Kedusha. He had Shmiras Einayim. He had Tara. He had, he surrounded himself by Gedolei Yisrael, the Chazon Ish and the Stipler and many others, Rav Shach. He wrote Svarim, he developed Chidushim, he's been learning, he's been churning Torah for close to a century. When you start up with Reb Chaim Kanievsky, you're not starting up with Reb Chaim Kanievsky, you're starting up with 90 years of Amelus Batayra, of Tara, of Kedusha, of Yerushamayim, of the highest caliber. That's the flaw in Kairach. Kairach saw Moshe and Aaron, he said, listen, Moshe and Aaron, Tamidacham, Amit Amachacham, Moshe and Aaron, nice people, I'm a nice person, Moshe and Aaron, Yichas, I have the same Yichas. So he sort of like said, I could do this. I could challenge them. And I could make up an entire reason why, and ki kol eida kulam kedoshim, we're all holy, rav lachem b'nei Levi, it's not fair, and I'll be a rabble-rouser, and I'll get a lot of people, great people involved. But the mistake that he made was, he was looking at them as they are today. He didn't understand that Moshe and Aaron struggled mightily to become who they are. And they became Gedolei Yisrael not by accident. They became Gedolei Yisrael not because magically some Shkedim developed and that made them Gedolei Yisrael. It was the Pracha, it was the Tzitzin that was growing, all those stages of development to get to the Shkedim that you see today, that's what made them Gedolim. It's not just that they poof became Gedolim. When you see a Gadol B'Yisrael, it's not because they had a great, upbringing or because they had a shver that was a Rosh Shiva that gave him a position or whatever. There were many Gedolim that never had positions. They weren't Rabbonim in a regular way. They didn't have a shteller. They didn't have weren't Rosh Yeshivas. They weren't Chassidish or Rebbes. They're just simple Jews that sat and learned Torah. And Klal Yisrael recognized them as Gadol B'Yisrael. The Stipler never, in the last years of his life, since he came to Eretz Yisrael, I don't believe he had a regular position in a yeshiva as a Rosh Yeshiva. And there are many other people that they never, Reb Chaim Kanievsky never, he doesn't have a formal position. He might be the Nasi of a lot of yeshivas and starting and develop, but he doesn't have a formal position as Rosh Yeshiva anywhere. Why did Klal Yisrael recognize him as God? Because he's Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu selected him because of all of the amelos and the Tara and the Kedusha and the Das Tara and the Sur Meirah and the Asay Taiv and the Hidr Mitzvahs and all that he did in his life. That's what makes him great. The Shkedim are nice. That's the end result. But if you want to understand what a Gadol is, you have to understand the development process to become that Gadol, the challenges that they had, and the amazing amounts of Yigia and Hasmada and Kedusha and Avas HaTar Yerushamayim that they had, that's what made them Gedolim. Moshe, from the earliest stage, Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayigdal Moshe, Vayetze Elocha, Vayarpil Sivlo Islam, his godless was attained from an early stage. He didn't become Moshe Rabbeinu when he was in the last years of his life in Mitzrayim. He went out and he lent a shoulder and an eye and a heart to Klal Yisrael. Even though he was in the Beis HaMelech, he could have very stayed comfortably in the Beis Parah, but he went and he was Meiser Nefesh for Klal Yisrael. Aaron was happy for his brother's success, and he would have gone out Betufim Mechayles with bands, with orchestras. He would have played for Moshe Rabbeinu to greet him and to welcome him as leader of Klal Yisrael, even though it must have been personally maybe difficult for him. But he rose above his natural inclinations, and that's godless. Godless is all the things that a gadol has to do to become that gadol. That journey that they took, that's what makes them Gedolei Yisrael. That's something that nobody in the world can challenge Reb Chaim Kanievsky with, Reb Steinemann with, because these are people that 90, 100 years of Amelos Batayra, of Kedusha of Tara, that's what made them into what you see at the end. If they say a Maisa with Reb Steinemann was the Gadol Hadar, he was, Reb Shach basically gave him over the mantle of leadership, and he was a little more lenient, let's say, when it came to things that traditionally the Haredi world were not so lenient about, like about Yeshiva Bachram joining the army he created, or he was behind the Nachal Haredi, that if boys are not learning, then they can make a frum troop in the army. And a lot of Kanoim in Bnei Brak and beyond were very, very upset by this. They felt this was a break in tradition, and he had no right to do this. And they were Mechutzafim Gemurim. Rav Steinemann was the Gadol Hadar, the Tzadik Hadar, and they basically protested against him, and they made machais, and they screamed at him every time he would go to speak publicly, and they would put up posters all over the Frum cities, basically being Mevaza Taira. And one time, there was a real mechutzav, and he was like starting a rebellion against Reb Steinemann on this front, and somebody said to him, "Hey buddy, listen to me. Okay, you're going toe-to-toe with Reb Steinemann?" He says, "You think you could do that? Let me tell you something." He says, "What Reb Steinemann ate in the last 40 years, you ate today." Reb Steinemann did not eat. He basically had little vitamin tablets. He wanted no hanaf melmazi. He ate very, very little. He says, "What Reb Steinemann ate in 40 years, you ate today. And what Reb Steinemann learned today, you learned in 40 years, maybe." You don't know what Reb Steinemann is. We look at Reb Steinemann, okay, he's a rabbi and whatever, and people say this about him, that about him, Reb Shach, you know, he's this, he's that. You know, they throw Lashon Hara out about Gedolei Yisrael. You don't know what makes a gadol a gadol. A gadol doesn't, he wasn't magically elected president of the United States, you know, because the country was in the mood for change. He became HaKadosh Baruch Hu's choice for the gadol b'Yisrael because of his life experience, what he put in. This was the message of the Matas, I believe. What's the Musar Haskel of the Matah? What is this almonds growing on the Matah? What's that all about? What it's all about is that you're going against Aaron. You think that Aaron is something that you could just knock off and say, "I'm like Aaron"? I'm going to show you what Aaron is. Aaron is the Prachim and the Tzitzin and the Shkedim. That whole development, that's what makes a Gadol a Gadol. It's not just poof, he has shkedim growing on his matah. No, you're going to see Mateo Yifrach. I'm going to show you the precha of the matah. I'm going to show you that the development stages, those important fundamental stages of development before he turned into Aaron HaKayin, that's critical for you to see, to understand, before you start a rebellion against the Gadol b'Yisrael. This is a very big musar shmuz for all of us to understand what a gadol is. When we speak about gedolim, we have to have the utmost respect and kavod for them, because if we don't, it's very, very bad. We're missing, we think that they're just human beings, and just like we could speak Lashon Hara, we can't, but just like we think we could speak Lashon Hara about our next door neighbor and about our roommate, we think we could speak about Gedolei Yisrael in the same way. But a Gadol b'Yisrael is a living Sefer Torah. And what makes him a living Sefer Torah is the years and years, the decades of work, of hard work, of labor that he put in to become what he is today. And if you start up with that, you're starting up not just with the Shkedim, but all the Prachim and all the Tzitzin, all of those decades of Amelus Bater, Yerushamayim, Kedusha Tar, you're going up against all that. You don't have the power to do that. saw recently an amazing maisa about a girl in seminary who, she was looking at a book of Gedalim. I really hope it wasn't mine, but and she was making fun of her Baruch Ber. Her Baruch Ber has the most beautiful appearance in the world. I don't know what she could possibly make fun of, but she said something about him that was very degrading. And suddenly her face froze. She became paralyzed in her face. And they went to Rav Steinemann, her father, and took her to Rav Steinemann and showed him her face, I guess, and said, like, you know, what happened over here? What can we do? He said, what preceded this? So she admitted to him that she had spoken badly about Rav Baruch Ber. She had made fun of him. So he says, well, you have to ask Mechilov. You have to go to his kever with a minion. He told the father, you get a minion, and go to the kever of Baruch Ber. The only problem was that we don't know where Baruch Ber's grave was. And so he says, we don't know where Baruch Ber's grave is. What should I do? I don't know where to go, where to find him. Anyway, as a result of this, it churned up a sudden, like, desperate need to find Baruch Ber's grave. And the people that are very Isaac with graves in Europe, they started getting on the case, and they had certain simonim. They knew that he was buried in a certain, they buried him very quickly, and his father was buried next to him. They knew certain simonim about where in that big cemetery that he was buried, his kever is. They used like infrared technology to figure out where his grave was, and they finally found it. They dug it up. They put a matzeva on it, and they took a minion there, the father with 9 other men. They davened, they asked the mechila, and then her face suddenly became well again. But that's how you have to understand that Gadol B'Yisrael is not he's not a regular person. He's not like you and me. Not somebody that you can go up against and make fun of and say, you know, bad things about, and how like we tend to do, whether it's our local shul rabbi or whether it's a rav in America or a gadol or a shiva, and of course going up to the top, Reb Chaim Kanievsky and people of his ilk, but people that are rabbanim, people that are gedalim in a true sense. They come with years and years and decades of Yegiyah and Haravanya, of Shkedim, not just the Shkedim, but the Prachel and the Tzitzel. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us this message through the Mata, saying, Rabbi Yisai, this is not the way to, you don't understand who Aaron is. You think Aaron is just another stick? Aaron is Shkedim, but more than the Shkedim. The Shkedim were preceded by Prachel, so you don't have that. Karach v'Adasai, as great as they were, they didn't have the Yegiyah, the Haravanya, the Prachel, the Shred, they didn't have that. They obviously didn't have that. If they would have had that, those Yesaidis, they would never have started up with a Moshe and with an Aaron. They lacked that fundamental thing that Moshe and Aaron did have. And as a result of that, that was the fatal flaw that they made with going up again. They were looking at the Shkedim. I could also have Shkedim. Yeah, you might have Shkedim, but you can't, you buy them in the supermarket maybe, but you can't organically develop Shkedim on your own like they did. You don't have the tzitzin and the prachim, the day-to-day learning and the steiging and the waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning and going to bed at 12 o'clock. You don't have that. You don't have the Yerushamayim. You don't have all of the growth that's necessary. That you don't have. And that's a very important lesson for us to take from this Yesaid. Now, I wanted to take it one step further. Notice that the Taisus Yishanim says that Miktsas HaPrachim Nisharu Shelei Gamlu Shkedim V'Nisharu Prachim. Some of those flowers were still on the stick. The staff of Aaron still had not only the Shkedim, but also the Prachim. Why? Because Miktsas prachim nisharu, shalei gamlu. Some of the flowers remained and they did not sprout forth. They did not sprout forth. And I think that there's a very big lesson to that for us. Besides for the lesson that we just talked about, how to understand what a Gadol B'Yisrael is, the lesson for us is that we ourselves aspire, many of us, to be Gedalim in a certain sense. whatever it is, gedaylam in rabbanis, gedaylam in learning, gedaylam in for klal yisrael, for askanis, whatever it is, we want to attain greatness, many of us, if not all of us. The problem that we have is that when we have failures in our personal lives, we look at those failures as being the derailment of our future. We see it as being something that we have that makes us unworthy for godless. I can't be a god. I can never be a Rav Moshe Feinstein or a Yaakov Kamenetsky or a Stipler or a Chaim Kanievsky or one of my Rabbeim or one of my Rabbanim. I can't do that. You know why? Because I have a very big Yetzirah and I have been Nichshol in Averis and those Gedolim never had those Tivus that I have. I have Averis and I'm so not proud of, and it's so difficult for me to live with them, and I bear them very heavily every single day. I have this guilty conscience, and I see myself as being unworthy to be a Gadol B'Yisrael in any way. Who am I to be a Gadol B'Yisrael? Am I Reb Chaim Kanievsky? Am I perfect? The Taisis Yishanim is telling us, I think, that even with Gedolei Yisrael, they also have prachim that were nishar, that did not develop into shkedim, meaning they had things that they failed in. There were failed prachim, failed shkedim that were supposed to develop, but they didn't win every single, not every shkeda, not every amen developed perfectly. Some remained in the, unripe. Some remained as a flower. They didn't develop fully for some reason, which means that godless is not determined by perfection. We don't believe that Gedolei Yisrael are people that can never make a mistake. Gedolei Yisrael are human beings that are blessed with a certain siyat d'shmaya and with das Torah and with, but they're not infallible. And a lot of the prachim might not grow, but as long as they win more battles than they lose, then they could still win the war. There's a very famous letter from Rav Huttner, possibly his most famous letter, and we've spoken about it countless times. And the letter basically speaks about a Talmud that he has who wrote him a letter. And he basically was saying the same Vart that I just said. He's saying that, I can't be a Gadol. I'm very depressed. I thought I'd be a Gadol, but you know what? I'm not going to be a Gadol because, I did a certain Avera and I'm so not proud of it and I don't know what to do about it and I'm depressed. And basically, I can't be a Gadol because the Gedolim were sort of perfect and I have this terrible guilty conscience of what I did wrong. So Rav Huttner says in his beautiful way, and we don't have time to go over the whole letter, but basically he speaks about the mistake that this Bachar had made in believing what he had expressed to Rav Huttner in his letter. He says, Hakol misaychachim mispalim umarimim al nes es taras haloshen shobal chavetz chaim. So everybody celebrates and is amazed and lifts up on a high banner the purity of speech that the Chavetz Chaim had. Everybody knows the Chavetz Chaim is synonymous with Shmiras HaLashon. So he's perfect. The Chavetz Chaim was perfect. Aval mi yodea, says Rav Huttner, who knows, min kol ha-melchames, all the melchames, the battles that he had to wage, the mavakim, the struggles, ha-mechshelim, the falls, unafilais, vanesiges lachar, the retreats, how he had to retreat from battle sometimes. You don't understand, the Chavetz Chaim did not magically become the Chavetz Chaim. The Chavetz Chaim became the Chavetz Chaim because a lot of struggles. Meaning, the Chavetz Chaim was not all shkedim. He wasn't batting 1,000. Nobody in life ever bats 1,000. You can take the greatest baseball player in history, they're not batting 1,000. If they're great, they're going to bat maybe 500. They're not batting 1,000. It's impossible. Human beings don't bat 1,000. But as long as you win more than you lose, then that is your journey to godless. And and Rav Huttner says more than that. Rav Huttner says that it's precisely when you're struggling with your Yetzirah that you're the closest to being a gadol. Godless, he says, is not sitting poolside al mei menuchas in his lashon with by tranquil waters with your gemara and everything is perfect. Godless is the struggle. It's the battle. It's the waging war against the Yetzirah and sometimes losing. And from losing, you'll ultimately win. He says you can lose a battle and win the war, and you'll win the war by losing battles. Because by losing battles, you're learning more about the strategies to win the Yetzirah ultimately. He says a famous Rav Huttner on a pasuk in Mishlei, Sheva yipol tzadik v'kam. A tzaddik falls down seven times and he gets up, and he says, foolish people think that the understanding of that verse, that pasuk, is that a tzaddik is resilient. He falls seven times, but yet he still manages somehow to get up from those fallings. So Rav Huttner says that's wrong. He says, you know what the real pshat in that pasuk is? Sheva yipol tzaddik. The tzaddik has seven nefilos. He has terrible downfalls. He lost a battle last night to his Yetzirah. He watched something that he shouldn't have watched. And then he spoke Lashon Hara. And then he went to a place that he shouldn't have gone to. And then he was Mevatel Torah. And then he did this and he did that. The come. From those battles that he had lost, from those Sheva Nefilos, from the fact that he fell seven times, that itself is where the Kima came from. His rising, his elevation, his becoming a gadol precisely comes from the doing battles against the Yetzirah. We're closer to godless, ironically, when we have the failures in our life than we have the successes. At the end of the letter, you have to see this letter is such required reading, but at the end of the letter he says, Shvil HaKavod Oiver Mistayvev. The path to glory is a windy path. It's like a snake path. Kinachash alei derech, like a snake on the road. A snake is like a wiggly thing. If you go up to Masada, there's a snake path you have to take, right? If you take the monorail, that's an easy way to get up there. If you want to hike up there, you got to take what's called a snake path. It goes in a loopy way. He says, Rav Huttner says, that's how the road to honor and glory is arrived at. It's not a straight path. There has never been a gadol in history that had, he was brought up with a silver spoon in his mouth, everything was perfect, he had perfect rabbi, perfect, you know, it doesn't happen that way. The way that you attain godless is they have to go through wars, physical wars sometimes, a lot of times neshama wars, yetzahara wars, political wars, they have to fight a lot of battles, and from those battles they became strengthened, they became steeled in battle. And that's how they were able to find their way to greatness. Greatness is not just the shkedim. If you think that all of our life we're just going to grow almonds and everything is going to be perfect, not the way it happens. The Taz Yishanim says that there were many prachim on Aaron's staff that did not become shkedim. He had failures in life. Not everything always develops perfectly like we plan it. But that's also what made Aaron Aaron. The Shkedim came from the fact that he had those failures and yet he was still able to transcend them to become Aaron, to see the Shkedim. He didn't abandon his course because he had some failures. He was able to develop Shkedim because he had the patience with himself in order to say that, okay, I failed. This only stopped at a perech. It didn't develop into Shkedim, but I'm still going to develop Shkedim despite that. Look what happened with Aaron HaKohen himself in his own life. He had a terrible fall. When it came to the Chet HaEgel, he was held responsible, partially responsible for perhaps arguably one of the worst averis in human history, the Chet HaEgel. That was a flower that didn't develop into an am, but he didn't let it get him down. He still became Aaron HaKohen. He became the Kohen Gadol in spite of that. And so this is like perhaps the most critical lesson that we can take on our way to godless. The first part of the Shmuz was the understanding of the Briska Rav in a philosophical way to realize that a gadol is not just the shkedim, but it's the development process of the to get to the shkedim. Now I'm saying another thing, that as we are on our own road to godless, don't let the prachim that did not develop into shkedim get you down. Don't say, I'm not worthy. If anyone says that I'm not worthy, then it's like the Vart of the Kutzker, that yish shalei midas, yish is shalei midas. If you have yish in life, it's shalei midas. You're crazy. You're not using your mind if you have yish. Yish is when you turn off your brain, you just say, I give up, and that's it. I'm a failure, I'm a loser, I have no, there's no hope for me, all hope is lost. A winner is somebody that says, yes, I have failed miserably, but I'm going to take that bad experience that I had, and I'm going to grow shkedim out of it. I'm going to continue my growth process, not in spite of it, but because of it. My kima, my rising, will come from my sheva nefilos. And that is the ultimate way to understand what we have to do in life. Whatever we have a lot of, we all have guilty consciences over things that we have done wrong. We're not proud of them. We do tshuva on them. But from the tshuva, we develop into greater people. That's the way life is. If you look, lahavdil, in the Gaiusha world, Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison is perhaps the greatest inventor of all time. Look what happened because of his invention of the light bulb. You're able, how much schar maybe does he have in Shamayim? If he would have kavan l'shem Shamayim, how much schar does he have? All of the light bulbs in every base medrash in the world. You know, allowing people to have asmada because of Thomas Edison. All of the, I would have said Zoom, but today I'm not a big Zoom fan because it's failing on me a lot. But that's, you know, all of the positive power of electricity. Yeah, tremendous invention. Before he developed the light bulb, he tried 300 times to develop light bulbs in different formats, and he was never successful. He failed 300 times, Thomas Edison, before he finally came up with a light bulb that worked. And people would make fun of him, even after he developed the light bulb, though. He said, you know, 300 times, what's your issue? He says, you failed 300 times, you're a loser. He says, no. He says, I didn't fail 300 times. I found 300 ways that the light bulb did not work. I needed to go through all those phases. I needed to know how it didn't work. The filament, if it was in this direction, if it was hanging, if it was low, if it was high, that's a way that it didn't work. Is that a failure? That's a success. If you just stop and say, man, this light bulb isn't working, you know, and just throw your hat in, throw in the towel and say, it's it. I'm done. I'm not doing this. That's a failure. But if you say, no, oh, it's so interesting that this didn't work, but I think I cop why it didn't work. It didn't work because it wasn't put the right way, or maybe the shape wasn't the right way, or maybe I didn't have enough, the metal was the wrong metal that I was using. Let's try a different type of metal, different filament, a different glass, until he got it right. Those 300 times were not failures. Those were necessary stepping stones to succeed. Kimat, every successful person that you'll ever read about in life are people that met with tremendous failures. Their businesses went bankrupt 100 times before they finally, you know, found one that worked, or their inventions didn't work until they found a way that to make it work, or a Nobel Prize winner until Einstein developed his theory of relativity. Who knows how many times he was not able to figure out the formula. Are those failures? Those are not failures. Those were ways of like pruning the trees to develop the shkedim that would ultimately sprout. The failures are successes if you look at them the right way. If you look at your Yetzirah's pulling you down and making you crazy, and because of that you get depressed, then the Yetzirah really has won and you have really failed. But if you're able to sort of get up, be resilient and say, I'm going to learn from my Yetzirah, from my nefilos. I'm going to learn from the prachim that were nishar prachim, from the ones that didn't develop into Shkedim, I'm going to learn more than the Shkedim themselves. If everything works out perfectly, if the Shkedim develop perfectly, it's not a kunz. I don't really learn so much about myself that way. I just, you know, I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I learned, I went to yeshiva, I was a nice masman, I got a shtela, everything is perfect. That's not a life that's so impressive. A life that's impressive is somebody that struggles with all types of handicaps, all types of challenges, whether they're physical, whether they're emotional, whether they're Yetzirah handicaps, whether they're war, different situational handicaps that a person finds themselves, and they're able to be miskaber over them and triumph over them, that's when a person attains true godliness. And so we took today two major yesaidas from the Pasuk, speaking about the Prachim and the Tzitzin and the Shkedim, the Briskarav, who brings the Taisi Yishanim, that some of them did not develop, and the point of that, as the Briskarav says, was so that you see the actual Pricha, which was part of the Siman, and I think I gave two really good pshatim in explaining the understanding of that, the deep understanding of why those Prachim were necessary to still remain on the Matah for all time. Because it's a lesson for us, a twofold lesson, to understand that a gadol is a gadol not just because of what you see before your eyes, but all of the amelos and the pricha and the tzitzin and everything that went into those years of creating the gadol, and also to understand that that road to godless is not a perfect one. There's many nefilos, there's many nesyanos along the way, there's many failures. There's many times that we are completely devastated by what we've done. We've done the worst averus in the world, possibly, sometimes. And we are utterly disappointed with ourselves, and we question the very foundations of our existence. If I'm a Ben Taira, how did such a thing happen? It's a good question. And the answer is one of two. One, either you could say, you're right, it's a teiku, and it's a pircha on me, it's a tiyuf on me, and therefore I'm just going to coast the rest of my life. I'm not going to attain godless ever. Or fakeret, it's going to be the greatest motivator. You're going to say, yeah, I failed, but watch what I'm going to do now. The sheva yipol tzaddik v'kam. My rising, my greatness will come precisely because I'm going to do battle again and again, and I'm going to win, I'm going to triumph, I'm going to prevail. I may have lost that battle, but I will win the war. And Mitzvah Hashem, if we're able to do that, we will have a tremendous life. We will be able to be Machshev Gedalim, and we'll be able to personally develop into the Gedalim that we're all expected to become. Have a wonderful Shabbos, and...